Well, hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. It's really nice to be on the airwaves again. And hopefully Dr. Dudley Danoff is there. Hello, Dr. Danoff. Not yet. Okay. He will be shortly. He's calling in from Los Angeles. He's the author of Penis Power, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health. And I want to read to you a couple of blurbs on the back of his book. And the first one is from the famous Mr. Larry King. And he says, Larry King says, gives insightful, accurate, humorous, and knowledgeable answers to all the questions you were afraid to ask. I loved it, learned a lot, and highly recommend it. And then we have Laura Hayden, author of How to Satisfy a Woman Every Time and Have Her Beg for More, dispels many male myths, especially about size. And we know we have lots of male myths about size. A must read for all men and women and the women who love them. So, Doctor, I know my producer, who is Jesse, will let me know when Dr. Danoff, who's calling in from Los Angeles, is on the line. Meantime, I can tell you, I think, a very funny penis joke, since his book is Penis Power. And here's the joke. A penis has a sad life. His hair is a mess. His family is nuts. His nearest neighbor is an asshole. His best friend is a pussy. And his owner beats him. Oh, dear. That's a little humor about the penis. And I have found, especially with my clients who are premature ejaculators, that... And I've been doing this work for over 32 years. So the most common presenting complaint among younger men is premature ejaculation, or maybe we could better describe it as involuntary ejaculation. And because they're ejaculating before they want to. So it's very common for guys to not treat their penises very kindly. So I'm not sure where my guest is, but let me just refer to our most recent email, which was yesterday. He's all set to call in tomorrow. And our plan is to talk about, because he's a world-renowned urologist.
Hello.
There you are, Dr. Dudley Danoff. Hello.
Hello, hello.
I have been sort of working the audience a little bit until you showed up.
I know. For some reason, I had a 206 number I was calling.
Oh, yeah, that's my landline. Yeah. So then you called the 888 number and you
right.
came into PRN. Terrific.
Right.
Hello, Dr. Danoff.
Hello, Deanna.
It's so nice to have you back, and I was just figuring out, do you know that this is your number six?
Oh, my
visit.
Goodness. I thought it was about three. See, time goes fast when you're having fun.
I guess so. Isn't that usually the truth?
Yes,
it is. And so the last time you were on was May 5th, and... we spoke some on that program about sexual satisfaction and life and love and all of that. And, of course, your book is full, Penis Power, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health, and it is full of practical, safe, no-nonsense advice for men and for women. And you've got lots of facts about erectile dysfunction, potency, and the prostate, and then lots of tips for healthy, active sex life at any age. And
so
you
I wanted to tell you that we spoke in May. In July, which is June, July, which is last month, I came out with a new edition to the book.
Oh, good.
The new edition is called The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health.
How to stay vital at any age. Get your publicist to send me a copy. And
yeah, I don't know why he didn't do that. We took the word penis off the title because it's, you know, a lot of mainstream press was a pushback. People, believe it or not, Deanna, in the 21st century still see or hear the word penis as a pejorative word. It's a body part. You know, it's a penis is to the urologist what the stomach is to the gastroenterologist. Ridiculous.
So you've redone the title, and have you added some new parts to the book?
Absolutely, some new parts, some updated material about robotic surgery and prostate cancer and erectile dysfunction. And we have a new website, the Ultimate Guide to Men'sHealth.com.
All right, and I'll put this in my summary after the show.
Yeah.
The Ultimate Guide to
Men'sHealth.com.
Okay.
And
terrific.
At Twitter, at Dr. Danoff, one word. We've got all kinds of stuff out there.
Okay, terrific. And I think your publicist is Javier.
Yeah,
maybe
Javier,
you can
right.
Get him to send me a copy because
you've
got to be one of my most favorite guests, and that's why you're back for number six.
Oh, boy.
They're
going to start talking about us if we keep this up.
That would be fun, except that you're so happily married, and I'm happily engaged.
There you go.
And your wife, I got to meet her in Monterey when you presented at our Quad S conference, or was it ASEC? I guess it was ASEC conference.
Yes.
ASEC listening audience stands for American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. And Dr. Dudley Danoff was a presenter. But you'd already been on my radio show two times before that.
A couple of times before that, yes.
Yes.
And it was a pleasure to meet you in person.
It's always nice to put a face to somebody that you just admire so much.
And thank you so much.
You're welcome. So the new website, The Ultimate Guide to Men'sHealth.com.
Right, and then and the title of the book is The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health, How to Stay Vital at Any Age, and it's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all the usual places.
Okay.
It just came out in July, so
okay.
I guess it was after we spoke on the
yeah,
May
it was.
Date.
In,
yeah, yeah.
Okay, terrific. Yeah, it's too bad about, because the penis power, and then the graphics on your book. I'm holding your book in my hand right now.
I mean,
are great.
Isn't that great? Isn't it clever?
It's very clever.
It's amazing how the mainstream. I mean, look, I've done hundreds of radio interviews and magazine, newspapers, television, but they're always reluctant, at least on television, for me to hold up the cover of the book. They say it's too graphic. I mean, it's absurd. But.
Yeah, it is. It's absurd, and
I hold myself out, you know, as a mainstream urologic surgeon who has an interest in ED. You know, there's nothing salacious about my book. It's not a how-to book. It's not the Kama Sutra. It's just some really good, solid information on how to live a more fulfilling life when it comes to sexuality.
It is indeed, and people need more information. A very interesting survey was done of sex therapists because a lot of people wonder, well, do sex therapists, like myself, have a better sex life? Well, in this case, absolutely, but do they have a better sex life? So the survey showed that, yes, sex therapists generally do have better sex lives. They should probably do this with urologists as well and maybe OBGYNs. But for sex therapists, what they found is that they do have typically a better sex life because they can have sex without anxiety, that they
have
so much knowledge.
Yeah, and they also have, you know, insights into, you know, different behavioral issues. So
right.
Definitely, and not to make a pun, but they definitely have a leg up.
A leg up, right. No, that's a good pun.
because, and, I mean, it's true. Insight, you know, insight, knowledge is knowledge. And it does make things when things get a little bit tough or a little out of line or there's a psychological misunderstanding or there's a physical failure. A sex therapist, you know, has the ability to sort it all out and say, gee, this is not the end of the world.
Right.
Or is, right.
No, that's very true. Now, I thought it'd be interesting, before we get into some of the other topics, and we are going to talk about the so-called pink Viagra, because it's very current. But I thought it'd be fun to find out, have the listeners listen in, and if they're not listening live, they will listen to it in an archived way. And so your penis IQ, and so I've got all the answers. I'm going to give you the questions, but give the multiple choice and see if the listening audience can take part, because we're back.
Yes, I hope I have all the answers.
Oh yeah, you do, because this is from your book.
Okay, there you go.
So, so the first question is, and I want the listening audience to see if they can answer the correct give the correct answer before you come in, you chime in. So true or false, the penis undergoes virtually no change in size or appearance as a man ages.
It's absolutely, shall I hold the answer for a moment?
No, just
that's,
go ahead.
That's true. It's if you look at a photograph of a 70-year-old erect penis and a photograph of a 20-year-old erect penis, you virtually cannot tell the difference.
Mm-hmm. So, no, I think that could be reassuring for men, because you also say that other organs can degenerate. You say, like, skin wrinkles and your waistband
expands. Right, absolutely. Calluses, sagging eye, you know, bags under your eye, but the penis virtually unchanged.
Yeah.
I call that a penis paradox.
A penis paradox, okay.
There you go.
And it's a penis paradox because why? I mean, I can imagine, but
well, I mean, if every other organ or virtually every organ in your body ages and it doesn't, it would be a paradox.
Exactly. Okay, so the second question is, which of the following does not affect a man's penis power? A, vasectomy. B, anxiety. C, nicotine. D, high blood pressure.
So the answer is vasectomy.
That's right.
So vasectomy does not in any way change erectile function. It doesn't change libido. It doesn't change the volume of the ejaculate. It just interrupts the sperm, which is the part of the ejaculate which is responsible for making babies. And if you take a volume of sperm, say 2 or 3 cc's, the number of that semen, the volume of the sperm can fit on the tip of a pin. So it virtually no effect whatsoever.
And we all know that, this is a pun, Dr. D, there's a vast difference between children and no children.
Very well put. And so, by the way, it's reversible. So, a man who gets a vasectomy, and then for some reason something happens to his first mate, and then he goes on a few years, meets somebody new who wants to have children, a vasectomy is reversible with a very, very high success rate.
But isn't that based a lot on the skill of the urologist who did the surgery?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
That operation of reverse vasectomy is called vasovasostomy.
Mm.
long okay. word. It means you're attaching one end of the vas to the other. Yeah, we use a microscope and tiny yeah. little thread-like sutures, but it's highly effective.
Well, that's good to hear. All right, so the third question on your penis IQ quiz is the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that 19 million new cases of sexually transmitted diseases occur each year in the United States. Which of these is the most common? A, genital herpes, B, syphilis, C, chlamydia, D, gonorrhea. And so the answer is, Dr. D?
You need to give me the drum roll first.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I don't have that sound effect.
Well, by far, chlamydia.
Yeah.
And so all of those, with the exception of HIV/AIDS, mm-hmm. is 100% treatable. And clearly, even with HIV/AIDS, we're making tremendous progress in drugs, and we're certainly mm-hmm. pushing the line way to the right.
Mm-hmm.
But it still remains the one that really, at the end of the day, is not curable at this point in time. I think we're getting close, but at this point in time, not curable.
Yeah, but certainly I remember so well in the mid-1980s when so many, particularly homosexual men, were dying of
absolutely.
HIV.
Well,
it was just... tragic.
Yeah, they were dying at an exorbitant rate, and they were dying before anybody understood exactly what they were dying from.
Exactly. And then yeah. so the medical scientists got on it.
Well, tremendous.
Right? And
tremendous.
What happened? It was it just there must have been so much more research going on at that point because wanted to stem the tide.
Absolutely.
And
the reality is, you know, there are so many men with HIV, AIDS, who mm-hmm. are living healthy and productive lives in which the HIV, AIDS is in remission and under control and, mm-hmm. and really not impacting in their lives in any way whatsoever. And now there's a couple of new medications on the market which actually claim that they can cure HIV, AIDS, which I think is just remarkable and deserving of three cheers.
Absolutely. And then, of course, there are many men that have now lived with it for 25 or 30 years.
And certainly recognized the importance of practicing safe sex. So, again, you
right.
can do anything you want behind your bedroom, closed bedroom door, as long as you're practicing safe sex.
Right.
That's the only admonition that I give to my patients and to anybody else who's listening to me.
Yeah, let me digress from the penis IQ for just a second, because one of the concerns that some older single people have, and they want to practice safe sex, but if the guy has ED, erectile dysfunction,
right.
And so his penis is not erect enough to get the condom on. What I recommend, and I want to run this past you, Dr. D, is that the guy, if he can, he takes one of the PDE5 inhibitors, Viagra or whatever, to get his penis erect so he can put the condom on. Is there anything else he can do if he can't take one of Cialis?
Well, you know,
one of them?
There's not much, but obviously mm-hmm. if his penis is not erect enough, he certainly can't penetrate a vagina. So
no.
that takes one element away
well,
from quote unsafe
yes.
sex.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there really is no other way that I know of.
Yeah. Well, maybe how about the female condom, which has improved, as I understand.
Well,
it.
I don't know how you would deal with oral sex in that setting. But...
Well, you it's not as good. It's from what I
go.
Hear.
Okay, there you go.
I've heard that you can put Saran wrap over the genitals.
Well, that I haven't heard of that, but
yeah.
certainly, hypothetically and theoretically, that should work very well.
Yeah. Well,
miracle,
so then let's go back to the penis IQ
of
quiz.
Saran wrap.
yes. So. We have two more questions for the penis IQ. According to the National Institutes of Health, How many men in the United States suffer from some form of erectile dysfunction? A, 3 to 5 million. B, 15 to 30 million. C, fewer than 1 million. D, more than 1 million men. And the answer is, Dr. D?
Well, it's certainly more than 1 million. I mean, it's probably in the tens of million. I mean, some people think as much as 30.
You say 15 to 30.
Yeah, absolutely.
In this country.
Yes, just in this country alone.
Yeah, half of whom are under the age of 65.
Right, exactly. And most of those men who are under the age of 65 who are suffering from ED, the majority of those men, more than 60% of those men, it is psychological and not physiologic. When I say physiologic, not related to blood flow or a venous leak or neurologic problem or diabetes or hypertension.
Or lower nitric oxide.
Right. So psychological, self-doubt.
Yeah. And I do see those. I do see those guys in my practice.
So the self-fulfilling prophecy. You doubt the performance of your penis, and it is like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like the dog, you know, chasing his tail in ever-decreasing circles until he disappears up his you-know-what.
Yeah.
No negative thoughts. No, the power of positive thinking as applied to the male genitalia. That's penis power.
That's penis power. And well, I will give, when I do the summary of the show after we speak today, I'll give the new websites. But people need to get this book.
Thank you.
It's just, your book is so filled with good information. It's just really excellent information, including the last question in penis power or penis IQ, which is true or false. Phalloplasty is an effective surgical technical for lengthening the penis. And a resounding answer, Dr. D, is, drum roll.
Absolutely false. So
yes.
Just for the benefit of your listeners, the term phalloplasty refers to the attempt to surgically enlarge the penis, make it longer, wider, whatever.
Right.
First of all, it cannot be done surgically. The results are abysmal.
Mm-hmm.
The most unhappiest of all of the patients that I have seen in my many years of practice are those that have had it done elsewhere. I mean, there isn't a man alive, Deanna, that doesn't in his heart of heart, in his dream of dreams, want a bigger penis. We all do. We all dream of it. But there's no legitimate way of doing that. And anybody that even looks or thinks about phalloplasty is way off base. And I abhor the idea, and I discourage anyone even thinking of it to get it out of their mind.
You've heard it here, folks. Please listen to Dr. Danhoff.
You know, unlike the nose or the breast, where you can do a rhinoplasty or breast enlargement, the penis is not a static organ. It goes from being a relatively small and passive little dangly thing to something which is long and firm and hard. And there's no grafting material, you know, that is adaptable to that sort of variation. And believe me, if there was a way to do it, I'd be doing it, and I'd be retired on some desert island in the middle of the South Pacific.
Well, as a senior woman who has for many years really appreciated the male penis, and I especially appreciate my fiancé, Brian's penis. I always feel like an erection is always to be admired, but it doesn't always have to be used.
Well, you know,
And women should admire, of course, I'm always using Brian's erection because I'm a horny old senior girl.
But, yeah, there you go. love those kinds of girls.
it's such a blessing, isn't it? Isn't it such a blessing to
Yeah, it really is. You should
to have one's libido.
Yeah. You know, I have a whole chapter in my book on advice to women, which is directed.
I know
I want,
you
I want
do.
Every woman to be a penis professor. I want her to know where, when, and how her man's penis works. And
yep.
if she can, you know, sort of, I don't like to use the word cater, but if she can understand that, the rewards which will come back in her favor are innumerable.
Innumerable. There's no question about it. Yes, I'm looking at your book, Women's Top 10 Complaints, and the first one is, he wants to have sex when I'm not in the mood. And we've got the new pink, so-called pink Viagra, which can really help women because so many women want. They want the desire.
Right. So a word about the new, what you call it, the pink Viagra. So,
well, yeah, okay. I know it's Phil Besteron. Am I pronouncing it right?
Yeah, I would just say as a urologist that Viagra and all of the PDE5 inhibitors work physiologically by increasing blood flow.
Yeah.
This drug does not increase blood flow. I am not sure that anybody really, including the FDA, understands the mechanism of action. Some have said it is a psychological, has some psychological impact, but it doesn't have, unlike Viagra and that class of drugs, it doesn't increase blood flow to the clitoris. Now, there are many sex therapists, and I'm sure you're amongst them, that recommend the off-label use of a small dose of Viagra in women. Because as we have discussed in the past, the clitoris is just exactly like a little penis except without a hole in it.
It has just about the same number of erectile tissues.
Right.
In many
cases of female ED, a small dose of Viagra has definitely helped. But the new drug, the so-called pink Viagra, it's not really Viagra. It doesn't increase blood flow.
No, I know. It's completely different. It impacts the female brain.
Right.
Go ahead.
If anybody could figure out how the female brain works, I want to be the first one online to read the instructions.
Sigmund Freud asked so many years ago, what do women want? And this has perplexed men since then for a very long time.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But the drug is due to be available, and I guess that the name is Addy or something like that. It's due to be available mid next month.
Right.
Because
it's been approved by the FDA.
I know.
And it's just sort of interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people in the pharmacologic business have said, you know, they thought perhaps that the FDA approval was a little premature, but that the FDA was under an enormous amount of pressure because the women of the world were saying, hey, look, you know, the men have a drug that's approved and many insurances pay for it. Here's a drug that looks promising, although we're not exactly sure how it works, and we want you to approve this one too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a lot of controversy about this drug with specific reference to, quote, how does it work, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of the conundrum.
So have you looked, are you likely, I mean, you mainly see men, but you also see some women,
right?
I presume. So are you likely to get requests from either wives of your male patients or female patients of your own for this drug?
So I see female patients, but usually not in the context of you know, sexual dysfunction.
Yes, I would
think. I mean, that's more in the province of the gynecologist. You know, I often see the woman come in with her husband or a mate or a partner or a boyfriend, girlfriend, and who say, gee, he needs some help, doc. What do you think of this? But it's always in reference to him. But I have not seen women who themselves have sexual dysfunction. We see women with urinary tract infections related to intercourse, so-called honeymoon cystitis, but usually not in terms of sexual dysfunction.
Mm-hmm. Right, but you do see plenty of men with premature ejaculation or erectile dysfunction.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, but you've read some about this new female drug.
Yes, I have. Yeah, yeah.
And me too. And so, because I've already had some of my female, I call them clients, but I, you know, say, oh, I want this, because so many women want to want. They have this desire. Just recently I saw a couple for, I don't know, the fifth or sixth session, and they're in their late 40s. She only has sex to please her husband. She has zero libido. Hmm. And she wants to feel more pleasure, to not just spread her legs and say, okay, baby, have at it.
Right.
I hope that doesn't sound too crude, but that's kind of the emotion that happens.
Well,
you know?
Certainly, based on my experience, but that is not an uncommon phenomenon amongst many women.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so unfortunate. You know, men are driven, libido, as long as the testosterone is flowing and the will is there and they're physical capable. I mean, I have guys, you know, in their 90s who are, you know, have severe ED, and they say to me, oh, doc, please, can't you give me something? I just want to get it up and in one more time. I mean, the guys in their 90s, they never stop thinking about it.
Right. Oh, I know. You know, that's exactly right. I mean, you have more experience with it than I do,
right.
But I have seen a number over the years, a number of, you know, men over, certainly over 70 and a few over 80.
Yeah. And then there are many
wanting
men,
it.
Many men, you know, who are well into their eighth decade, who still, thank God for Viagra and Cialis and Levitra, who still are extremely active sexually, able to get, you know, a good firm erection so they can penetrate. Now, maybe it may take them all night to do what they used to do all night long, but still enjoying sexuality in every sense of the word.
And it helps keep them young.
Well, I think so.
Or healthy.
Yeah, all of the above.
Younger in, yeah, their attitude, and if they have an interesting and interested partner.
Surely.
You know, then they're just happier. They're just so much happier.
You know, the other important thing is, you know, you have to be physically fit to have active sex. I mean, so you have to have some level of cardiovascular fitness. You have
right.
to have some level of aerobic fitness. You have to have some amount of lower body strength. You have to have some amount of upper body strength. So, you know, it's a great cardiovascular exercise, and it's a great psychological exercise. Clears the cobwebs away and takes the tension out of the day. I mean, I can't think of a better way of exercising than have sex.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And then you also have the psychological part where you're feeling much closer to your mate as a result of being sexual. You know, there people can, I have found, sometimes they need a little bit of help by seeing me, a sex therapist, but there is no scientific or human reason why people can't have happy long-term love relationships.
And as you get older, you know, that closeness and that intimacy, I mean, you know, when you're a young stud with an erection 24/7, it's, you know, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, you know,
right.
that old joke. But as you get older, where it requires more intimacy or more stimulation to get things going, it breeds intimacy. And, you know, it's surprising. You walk around the hospital where you see an aging population and you see elderly couple, you know, walking hand in hand.
Right.
You know, as they say in French, engagé, you know, arm around the waist. I mean, it's astounding.
Yes.
And it's so heartwarming. It's such a wonderful sight.
It is a wonderful sight because emotional intimacy and vulnerability fuels the best sex. And people in long-term relationships are often very bonded. And you know, in the 32, 33 years I've been working in this field, among the people who have affairs, I have found they don't do it because their sex lives are boring. You know, I've never had anyone come to my office and tell me that they had an affair because they were bored in bed. They have affairs because they're lonely, because they can't emotionally connect with their partner. And so I mean,
there's a whole history of, you know, why are some cultures, for example, the French culture obviously comes right at the top of the list, where it is not unusual, nor is it frowned upon for a man to have both a wife and a mistress, and perhaps even children, you know, on both sides of the aisle. So obviously the mistress, the wife fulfills one emotional function. The mistress fills either an emotional or physical function or need or a combination. So, you know, it's complicated, as they say.
Well, it is complicated, but we don't, in this country, we don't have the kind of the cultural acceptance that they might have.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. And as a matter of fact, we're very puritanical. Maybe that goes back, you know, to the Mayflower. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I was watching some documentary on television talking about the infidelities of many of our past presidents and very, very famous people. And I was shocked when Dr. Martin Luther King was referred to as a serial philanderer.
Ah.
And so the commentator was saying he may have been a serial philanderer, but that doesn't take away from his greatness, you know, as an inspirational figure for
absolutely
multiple
not
generation.
I mean,
so
we don't,
it's sort of a dichotomy, kind of an interesting commentary.
Yes. And don't you think that part of the cultural environment that we have in the U.S. is that there's lots of judgment and lots of judgment about people. So of course
in sexuality we have to take, you got to take a back step. I often say, you know, lighten up, dude. That's a favorite expression of mine. Yeah, there's got to be more of an open attitude. I mean, sexuality and libido and what drives people to do certain things, nobody can really explain. But we have to lighten up and be less judgmental and look at a man for his total worth and not, you know, something which appears to be an indiscretion. And I think if you ask many men about an indiscretion, they will give you an excellent reason for it. I love my wife. I've been married for 30 years, but she doesn't sexually excite me. You know, I'm physical. I have a few bucks in the bank. I like to do things. And I have, you know, a girlfriend or a mistress on the side who fulfills, you know, the physical need that my wife doesn't give me. Are you planning to leave your wife? Absolutely not. Not in 10 million years. So I hear that all the time.
Of course. Of course you would hear that all the time. I hear it too. But I can also help. When couples come to me after an affair, they want to know, well, can we rebuild this marriage? And of course they can if they're both invested in rebuilding it. And whoever, so say the wife was cheated on, if she can begin to forgive her mate. It's very complicated. I have a lot of cases like this.
Do you ever get involved with, you know, that kind of a scenario? For example, the husband sort of cheats on the wife and then asks the husband, you know, why did you do it? And sometimes if the husband can verbalize why he did it, going back to what I just said, you know, I love you, my dear, But, you know, sexually it wasn't very exciting anymore, and I found this younger woman who did a few things that you forgot how to do, and, you know, it doesn't mean she's a better woman than you are. I mean, do women or wives who have had that happen to them, are they forgiving? Is that a good mechanism to get them back together? What's your take on that, Deanna?
Well, it's all over the place. It varies a lot. There's no one intervention makes all the difference because there are so many different kinds of cases. And I think a lot of guys will, and women too, because of course women have way more opportunities in the last 10, 15 years because they're working and they're traveling. So women now have more opportunities to be unfaithful to their marriage.
Right.
So it's not just men anymore. So it can vary a whole lot, but usually it's not because they're bored in bed at home. It's because they can't feel an emotional connection with their partner. You know, this attachment theory is pretty good for some of the psychotherapy I do for my clients because when one person moves away from another, it's creating emotional distance. And emotional distance can, especially if somebody comes out, male or female, out of a family of origin where there's been either anxious attachment or avoidant attachment or some of both, then alarms go off, and the alarms go off in the amygdala, part of the brain, which is, and women need to feel safe, by the way, and women can't even have orgasms, I'm digressing a little bit, unless they feel safe. The amygdala has gone to sleep. You know that part of the brain?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and
I haven't heard that expression that a woman, in order to have an orgasm, must feel safe. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful concept.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, absolutely fits with my understanding of the way women react, you know, to sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
I have never heard that before. I think that's a wonderful, wonderful concept. And I definitely adhere to it. I'm putting that in my in my little book list here.
Okay, good, good. Dr. Diana's adding to your
list of things.
My to-do list.
Make them feel safe.
Make them feel safe. And by the way, women need to feel safe. They often need to feel relaxed.
Right.
And so, one way to decompress is. I tell women is to ask your guy to give you a massage and it'll turn him on to see you naked and his caresses will of course release the feel good hormone oxytocin in your body.
Yeah.
And that can really be useful. So women can put on, maybe they don't need the female Viagra because we just don't know yet, about the long-term effects of this, but
right.
I tell, put on music and dance,
right.
But it can do the trick, you know, because a little exercise increases the production of testosterone in our body.
Absolutely.
Which can get us revved up for sex.
Well, you know, as I've said many, many, many times, I say it in the book, and I think I've said it in the past to you, and I believe in it wholeheartedly, that the greatest aphrodisiac is love itself. No greater aphrodisiac than love. And
yeah.
All of the things that speak of love, a gift, flowers, beautiful scent, a wonderful warm environment, dim lights, you know, Hawaiian music, the waving palm trees. I mean, those are the things. You don't need, you know, ground up rhinoceros horn or goat gonads. Those are worthless. So, you know, and when it comes to those things, by the way, those so-called, quote, aphrodisiacs, you know, $39.95, 40% of the time it's the placebo effect, as you well know, you take any scientific experiment across the board and you give somebody a sugar pill, 40% of the time the patient taking the placebo will say, because you've suggested that it will do something, they say, oh yeah, it definitely worked over the, you know, over the nothing. And when it comes to things sexual, you know, the placebo effect is even more pronounced. So all of these people, internet magazines, are selling all of this garbage, you know, at exorbitant rates, and they're hoping and profiting on this so-called placebo effect. So if I paid $39.95 for something, you damn well...
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Thing is fabulous, unbelievable. My penis was never stiffer. You know, my moon was never more elevated. And all it is some sugar-coated pill.
No, the placebo effect, I mean, you know, as a physician, as a doctor, as a surgeon,
yes,
how powerful it can be.
And when it's sexual, it's even more magnified.
Yes, yes, I think that's right. I think that's right. The placebo effect. Yeah, I mean, there are certain, if we're talking about aphrodisiacs, there are certain aphrodisiacs, so-called, like oysters, which are high in zinc, and that can affect testosterone in the body, and it can also improve the brain and interest.
Especially when you're paying $36 a dozen, if that doesn't work, you're going to feel, very cheated.
If I don't get the effect, please.
That's right, absolutely. The local oyster bar is depending on that.
Yes, yes. And then some people will swallow an oyster, especially a guy, and if he does it very slowly, he'll imagine, I've heard this before, that it's like going down on a woman's genitals. A little bit.
Oh, that's it's understandable. No, absolutely understandable. Yeah.
So, but I think, you know, passion is like everything else. It ebbs and it flows. But sex is always going to be boring, to go back to, you know, the complaint that some of your patients and mine say, oh, it's boring. It's going to be boring if it's one-dimensional, if it's cut off from emotional connection. But on the other hand, if you're emotionally involved and sex, then sex has 100 dimensions to it. And there's this emotional openness and responsiveness and tender touch and erotic exploration, and all of these things can come together. When, back to the safe thing, Dr. D,
yeah,
when a woman feels safe and she can speak up and lovers can be tender and playful one moment and maybe fiery and erotic another, because securely attached partners can more openly express their needs, people that have been together a long time, their needs and their preferences.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And I think the other is this open communication, with the emphasis on communication. So I have to tell you or my partner what I want. I may not necessarily have to do it in words. I can do it in actions. You have to tell me what you want. I have to be listening. I have to be receptive. So communication going both ways is also a key to intimacy and keying. A key to having a successful sexual relationship at any level.
Yes. Yes. And talk a little bit, this is a little personal, but if you could just say a few things about why you and your wife have been so happily married for so many years.
That's
how many
true.
Years has it been?
Oh, my gosh. I think 46.
46 years. Okay.
And it's interesting because
my
wife is in the entertainment business and has had an extraordinary career for more than 50 years. We just came back a week ago from Japan, in which she had a big hit in Japan. She sings in Japanese, has sold millions of records, in which she appeared on a huge national television show of the hits of the 70s. And there she was, the only non-Japanese woman. She does look beautiful and ravishing. But, you know, look, I'm very, very proud of that. But that in and of itself doesn't make a marriage. I would say that the single thing that comes to mind about the success of at least my relationship and many relationships I see, particularly where I am in Hollywood and Beverly Hills, you know, is mutual respect.
Yes.
Mutual respect. I respect.
And why don't you add on to that support?
Oh, absolutely. Mutual respect, plenty of room, plenty of distance. You know, I might love to play golf. She doesn't need to love to play golf. All she has to do is respect my love for the game.
Right, right.
You know, she's been singing all our life, I mean, married life and traveling, you know, sometimes weeks on end, and I respect that, and I give her the distance, and I admire what she's done. She looks at me and my surgical accomplishments, you know, all around the world, lecture, this honor, that, or she respects that, even though that takes away from our time together. So mutual respect and a lot of space. And then we have another one we think is very important. You know, we get emotional, we get angry, you know, bah, 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 yell, 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 and then in 30 seconds comes to the end, we say, next, meaning don't dwell, you know, we agree that we disagreed 2 minutes ago, but let's not dwell on it. Let's get to the next thing on the agenda. And we always do that. Next, when we want to end the argument, next.
I love it. And then that means that you probably don't go to bed angry.
No, you can't go to bed angry. No, no,
right.
No, you can't do that. Never go to bed angry.
No.
Yeah.
That, I did have the privilege of meeting your wife in Monterey when you gave the talk. And she's beautiful. She's charming. And it seems like, don't you feel really lucky
Absolutely.
That you picked each other some 46 years ago or something like that?
You know, I get up early in the morning and I go to the hospital every day and do what I need to do to provide, you know, a good environment for her to do what she wants to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I care very much, you know, about her and our family, and she cares very much. So if she's making a dinner, you know, she doesn't, you know, slop a hamburger on a plate with some, you know, mac and cheese. She really tries to do something special. And, you know, we try to eat simply, eat healthy. We have some salad and a protein, fish or chicken or meat. So we always start with a salad. And I married 47 years, I eat a salad almost every night for dinner. I never ate the same salad twice. I mean, what could you put in a salad? Lettuce, a cucumber, tomato, but always something a little different. Always something, whether it be the dressing, the way she sliced the vegetable. So she's always doing something that's so creative and takes great pride in caring. And I appreciate that. I mean, that's priceless.
It is priceless, it's no question, because it shows she cares, she knows what's going to make you happy.
Right.
And I think, because you never have the same salad twice, your brains are also producing a little more dopamine, the hormone of arousal, which needs some novelty. You're getting novelty at least with salads.
That's
Isn't
right.
That great?
Okay. So I got so excited the other day after salad, I couldn't even finish my dinner. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I know you are.
Stop, you know, the old joke, you have to stop doing that in a restaurant. Wait till you get home.
So I need to warn you, Dr. D, that at 3 minutes of the hour.
Yes.
We need to stop because I'll probably, I'm Jesse, the producer, said he's going to play the music, but I've been a little bit of an offender in the past and I want to keep Progressive Radio Network.
No, absolutely. We want to keep everybody happy.
Everybody happy because that's important. You know, I mean, I appreciate that they have now for 5 years broadcast my love, lust, and laughter shows. I'm so grateful to you, Dr. Dudley Danoff, that you have been a guest now. I'm pretty sure this is your sixth time.
Well, I appreciate it. Keep counting. That's very important.
Okay, we'll keep counting, and then off the air we'll figure out when you're going to come back, because, you know, getting good information out there is the reason I do this show, and you're one of my best guests for getting good, solid information out there.
Well, thank you. It's very kind.
Well, but it's very true. Thank you. You're welcome, and it's very true. So you missed my joke at the top of the show when I was waiting for you to call in. So here's the joke, although I think I said it on maybe show number 3, but it's from Playboy, you know,
yes.
The party jokes?
Yes.
So I know you'll like it, so I'm going to repeat it again.
Surely.
Because there might even be some people listening that might want to write it down. I know Brian, my fiancé, just thinks it's hilarious. He's now memorized the joke. So it says, a penis has a sad life. His hair is a mess. His family is nuts. His nearest neighbor is an asshole. His best friend is a pussy. And his owner beats him.
Oh, my goodness.
That's amusing, don't you think?
Yes, it is. Very covers all the bases.
It certainly does.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, Dr. D, I just, we're winding down now so that I can be true to my pledge to stop in a minute or two. As you look back on your 35 years as a
yes.
urologist?
Yes.
And something like that? And,
yes.
And, you know, I'm going to guess you're not eager to retire because you feel like you're making such a difference. Is that true, or are you going to retire?
I don't have any desire to retire. I have, in my practice, a lot of younger men that I brought in. We now have 11 urologists in our group.
Oh, there's the music. Oh, geez. Okay. Thank you, Dr. D.
You're welcome, Deanna.
Okay, we'll do this again. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.